Hello.
What does the fox say?
The fox says it's fucking lunchtime. I just literally got done with a horseshoer.
He finally
just got done and is heading out of here. So it's like, whew, well, all the 2-year-olds graduated kindergarten today and got sliders put on. So it took a little bit longer than I thought.
Do you ever have to keep a kindergartner back?
Yeah, no. Sometimes if I really feel like they need a little longer, then sure, we give them a little longer. But it's always a good feeling when you put sliders on all of the 2-year-olds and you don't send any home going, this one ain't going to work.
I would suppose that's probably a good thing.
You know, when it's a whole lot nicer to tell everybody, hey, your 2-year-old got sliders put on, they graduated, versus this one's not going to work. I think you need to come get him. Take a different
time
with him.
Actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because is it a big transition for a horse to put those on? Do they really have to, get their stance again when they realize they got them on?
No, you know, I find more often than not it helps them versus gets in their way. And what I like to do is I like to wait until I know they're really trying to stop before I put them on. So... normally I find that if I've got my woe in the right place and they're trying to stop, when I put sliders on, they normally get way better a lot faster. It's always one of those things where you want to transition that horse up into the plates, but at the same time, if he's not ready, he's not ready.
Right.
If I get to, like, oh, mine was started, January, February, I get to this time of year, I'm able to put plates on them, and then hopefully by the time I get to October, I'm thinking about using skid boots regularly when I stop them, then we're in pretty good shape. They don't need to be running and stopping 30 foot in August of their 2-year-olds. Yeah.
Right.
But at the same time, there's only so far you beat your head against the wall before you say to that owner, hey, this one just isn't cut out to be a reining horse. We need to find another job for him. And you don't waste the money putting plates on them and trying to make them something they're not going to be.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's probably anything in life.
Right.
I mean, at some point you kind of go, okay, this ain't working. Let's do
right.
something else.
Right. Let's change something, do something. And the thing is, and that's one of those deals. Like I'm one of those people. I would much rather go, this really isn't working. Let's change something. And that goes for the training program, the shoeing program, the feeding program. All the way through to even doing this, if I ever get to a point, which I very much doubt I will, but if I ever get to a point where I'm like, this really just isn't working, then I'll change something.
Yeah.
Nothing great comes from a comfort zone.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I mean, you've got to try to see what can be changed or what can be done differently if you want to grow or progress in any way, shape, or form.
Right. And that's why, a lot of my customers, when they do come out, like, I don't yell and scream at people when they're riding like some trainers do. I'm very quiet. Like, I will raise my voice so they can hear me and I articulate what I'm trying to say. But I push them a lot. Like, I'll push them out of their comfort zone, and I'll push them to do things that they're not really 100% comfortable doing, but it's like, hey, suck it up, Cupcake. You got to figure this shit out. I can't show the horse for you.
Yeah. No, I agree. You actually just made me think about a time in my life where my parents were going to try to get somebody to, I was going to do lessons And I'm a firm believer that says somebody doesn't necessarily have to be a bad person if you don't, like, mesh with the student. I firmly believe, like, there's particular styles that work for just certain people and some don't, you know. And I remember distinctly this girl would just yell. I mean, she would just – I remember her yelling, kick, 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 and that's not doing anything for nobody because you're not
– Right.
You're just screaming.
Right. I mean, you know, and I'll raise my voice and I'll yell so they can hear me, or if they're getting into a bind. But I'm not one of these that's, you know, constantly screaming, you know. It's like, I mean, I grew up in the English world, and, you know, as, like, you know, English riding instructors, you kind of feel like you're being screamed at the whole time. It's like being in the damn military.
I can imagine that, actually. I could see that, them being kind of strict over there.
Oh,
the high bar.
Oh, yes, it is. It is, and they set it there, and they keep it there, and you're either gonna fall into line and assimilate, or you're not, and you'll go do something else.
Which, it is what it is.
Right, right. But it's no different. You get it. You know, you get a job. You know, in town, and they have expectations. They have a way. You know, if you have a dress code or this or that, you have to fall into line and do the job as they want it done versus doing it how you think you can do it. And there's a lot of times we try to reinvent the damn wheel and we fail. And then we go, oh, that's why you wanted it done like that, because it actually works.
I couldn't agree 100. I mean, 100, I totally agree. There's some things that just be left alone. I mean, like, if it works, it works. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
I mean, I got told that a lot as an assistant. Don't reinvent the wheel, you dumbass. It's like, what are you doing? Don't do that. That shit ain't going to work. It's like, okay.
Right. I mean, well, and there are some things that can be improved on. I'm not saying that, you know, I mean, we wouldn't progress as human beings if we didn't, you know, improve things. Absolutely. But there are some things that are just better left alone. Like, just leave it alone. It works. Why mess with it?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So yeah.
But you guys, do what?
Oh, go on. You go ahead.
No, well, I was just going to say, so you just come back from the breeders.
Yeah, we just got back from the NIBC, and, you know, nobody died. Nobody embarrassed themselves too badly, especially me. You know, my horses were good. They just weren't quite good enough for me in the classes I was in.
Uh-huh.
You know, the youth kids I took, they swung pretty hard. They hit some and they missed some, you know, as you do. And then my Green Rainer got along real good. She won her first check ever in the NRHA, so she was very happy. It took her 3-4 attempts to get there. Once she figured out that I kind of did actually know what I was talking about, and maybe she ought to start listening. Then she actually went ahead and started and did really good and won some money on one day. So, and for her going to her first reining and her first reining horse, I mean, that was awesome. Normally the first two horse shows are kind of a throwaway with a new combination.
Right.
So it wasn't bad. I mean, you know, the horse I showed in the NRBC, she was good. She just wasn't good enough to make the finals. And then I showed one in the 25,000 that had opened, and he was the one that my Green Rainer had been showing all week. She'd shown him like 5 or 6 times before I had 2 days on him, and then I showed him. And the horse couldn't have been more ready. The horse was absolutely ready to roll. He everything was there, but we ran in up the middle of the pen, and the timing was off on the first stop, so we weren't very good on the first stop and back up. And then my timing was way off on shutting him down in the turnaround, and I was pretty much penalty one per judge first turnaround. And then he was plus half to plus one every other maneuver. So, but it's kind of hard to make up ground when you lope off out the pen out the middle of the arena when you lope off and you're already minus half, minus one. It's kind of tough to make that up. But, I mean, I ended up marking like a 213 on him, I think. So we did make some ground up. but it wasn't enough to get us anywhere near the money.
Well,
but it was fun.
You just made me think of something. So when you say you start off in a negative, so when you do a raining pattern or raining class, you start off at zero and you go up or down
so,
from there?
So you start at a 70. And
oh, okay.
So everybody when they first walk in the pen is at a 70. And it will go up or down in increments of half point penalty. You know, you can go plus half, plus one, plus one and a half. You can go minus half, minus one and a half. And then you have your penalties in there. You know, so for me, when I showed the white horse on the Friday night, I went steaming up the middle of the pen. We ran pattern nine, which is run in, stop back up, turn right, turn left, lope off left lead circles. So I ran in the middle of the game. I cracked that gate and pretty much coming close to third to fourth gear and carried on grabbing gears as we went in. I mean, I went steaming up the middle of that arena, and timing was just a little off, and I had to help him at the end of that stop, which dropped it from – it just made it not very pretty to watch. You know, so in my mind, I'm like, oh, that was a zero towards a minus half. Oops. And then I turned him to the right, and he turned huge. I mean, he turned huge, and my shutoff was way late. So I was a minimum penalty half, if not a penalty one, first turnaround. And then he was big plus half, second turnaround. So by the time I get to my fourth maneuver in that pattern, I've already you know, either gone up or gone down, depending on how things have gone. And when you think about the scoring system for the NRHA for the reigning classes, you know, a zero on a maneuver score is correct. So, you know, if you're running your pattern and they put a zero in the maneuver score, it was correct. Wasn't quite good enough to be credit earning, but it was correct, so it wasn't into the negative.
Right.
You know, plus half then is good. You know, above average, it's more than correct. It was correct, but it had, you know, credit earning speed or credit earning cadence or, you know, things like that. And then plus one obviously is excellent. Plus one and a half is like, wow, that was pretty damn fancy. You know, and the same thing going down the scale the other way, the minus half, the minus one, the minus one and a half. You know,
so you can basically predict your score as you're riding.
You know, if you're up to date on the maneuver standards and you understand the scoring system and you understand the penalty system, you know, yeah, you can have a pretty good idea. The thing is, though, is more often than not what happens is while riding the pattern, it feels one way, and when you actually watch it on the video, on the replay, or when the show organization sends you the videos from your runs, and you watch it, you're like, okay, I see where they got me, or, oh, wow, that looks a whole lot better than it felt. You know, I've had runs where I've walked out of the pen, you know, wishing a hole would open up in the gateway and swallow me on my way out, thinking to myself, that was terrible. And they've used it, they've marked it, and it's been way better than I expected. And I've walked around the corner to watch the delay feed video screen, watched it and gone, huh, there was none of that looked anywhere near as bad as it felt.
I can see that. Yeah, that's with anything for horses.
Right, you know, and once you've got a pretty good grasp on the scoring system and your horse, then, yeah, you can have a relatively good idea of where you're going to be at. You might be pleasantly surprised, or you might walk out going, oh, they were a little tough on me. But, you know, you pay your entry fees, you show up, and you're paying for somebody else's opinion of what you can achieve on that day. And some days it works, and some days it doesn't.
I've talked about that before, about how you're basically, you know, doing all of this for somebody else to tell you if you're good enough or not.
Yeah, right.
We almost question as to why we become crazy, like, well, I mean, do you look what we're doing?
Right.
I'm like, tell me if we're good enough or not.
Right. I mean, I've had people, and you know, especially last year, I had a couple of really good years last year and the year before in the show pen. And I quite often get, you know, newer customers coming through, and they're like, you know, how do I get to being that consistent where I can go mark a 71.5 to a 72.5 every time I step foot in the show pen? And I was like, you need to go get it wrong a lot. You know, and you don't, I said, and the problem is people watch like the NRBC level 4 finals where everybody's marking 73 and above. Like, you know, if you're marking a 216 in the finals, something went wrong. You know, all these guys are marking 73s and above, you know, but they're sitting on extremely high caliber horses that are freakish athletes and so
right.
good-minded. You know, those horses that are in the level 4 finals anywhere, the NRBC, the Derby, the Fraternity, the horses that are showing in the Run for a Million, those are the peak of our industry. Those are the very, very top of the mountain. And there's just not that many of those horses floating around.
Well, so, yeah, I mean, the cost of them is...
Well, I mean, yeah, exactly. That to begin with. You know, but a lot of the greats aren't made, they're born. They just happen to be in the right hands. You know,
do you think that, have you ever seen that? Have you ever seen like a really just, I mean, well-bred horse end up, I don't want to say in the wrong hands in the sense of like a bad person, but somebody that doesn't know what they're doing that's not able to bring out the potential that horse could have?
You know, I mean, I don't know that I've necessarily seen it in such a way that I can pinpoint it. You know, but I've seen horses get shown as 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds, and you're like, it looks like a really nice horse, just maybe not quite an open horse or whatever. And then 2 years later, you see it with somebody else, and they are just absolutely kicking everybody's ass with it. And it's not necessarily that the first person wasn't getting the job done correctly. Sometimes horses and people just don't gel.
Yeah.
You know, I've had it on the flip side where I got handed one as a 7-year-old. She'd been through 3 different training programs, was broke, was extremely broke, could do all the stuff, but nobody had won any money on her. They never could get her shown. You know, and I was like, well, you know, she's 7, she's been through this guy, been through that guy, been through this guy, and they've tried to show her and haven't gotten nothing done. You know, and the owner's like, look, please just give it a go. So I did, and I ended up winning a world title on that man. You know,
she
was only ever not good for me in the pen one time. And... That wasn't her fault. That was my fault.
Yeah.
You know, and so I mean, sometimes it happens like that. You know, but I've had full siblings. I've had one that was a really exceptionally nice horse that I won a bunch of money on as a 3- and 4-year-old, and sold him for a lot of money, and got super excited about his full brother coming in, who I thought was better necked, better legged, a little better bodied. You know, I thought as a horse looked like a nicer individual. And this thing was worthless. As a reining horse, he was atrocious. He couldn't do any of it. And I mean, and I kept chipping away, and because you know, I was like, it's got to be in there. His brother was a phenomenal athlete. Yeah, no, this guy not so much.
So, that's always crazy, I mean, to hear that.
But I mean, he ended up being a really good rope horse. You know, just because they're not reining horses doesn't mean they won't be good horses.
Of course.
But they will probably be broke if they started out life trying to be a reining horse.
Yeah. So you think what the training for reining horses do you think the initial training for reining horses, all horses should go through?
I think a majority of horses would be far better individuals later on in life if they'd at least had, you know, 90 to 120 days start one, like 90% of reiners start theirs. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, because the maneuvers kind of require more closer contact, you think?
No, it's because we get them broke. We don't, and so this is, you know, for me it's quite an interesting topic because I've always said that you cannot get one broke enough. And so I got a new horse in before I went to the NRBC. And he's a 5-year-old gelding. And I was told he's been through this training program as a 2-year-old and been here and done this. And then the lady got kind of scared of him. For some reason, you know, she said it was, the vet had told her it was to do with his knees, to pull him out of training and rest him. Well, now he went from being, you know, the end of his 2-year-old year to now being into his 5-year-old year, and he hadn't done anything. And she tried to go do some stuff herself, and it wasn't working out, and he scared her a little bit, and then he'd become a little bit of a pet, and so she sent him into me. And, you know, first thoughts on this thing was somebody's put in a lot of time in the groundwork, because I don't just trust what people say. I got that horse in, and we went to the round pen, and we did the sacking out and saddling and everything else, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to run through my checklist of all the stuff I want these things to be doing before I'm on their back riding them around, because right. I want to make sure nothing's been missed, and I want to make sure that he's not suddenly going to break into or do something stupid, or, you know, he's not cinchy, you know, stuff like that. So anyway, I'm glad,
I hate to cut you off, but I'm really glad you were saying what you're saying right now, just for the simple fact that, and I hate to cut you off, but like you see a lot of people on the internet start bitching and complaining, you didn't tell me this, you didn't tell me that, da 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 da. To me, I would do the same thing that you're saying if I'm buying a horse. I'm going to find out for myself.
Well,
you can say whatever you want to say, but I'm going to go ahead and find out for myself.
Right. I mean, and that's, you know, the thing is this lady brought this horse in, and it's not that I don't trust her or I don't believe
right.
her.
Right. But, no, not at all.
But at the same time, there is one piece of the puzzle that won't lie to me, and that's the horse. And it's not necessarily saying that owners lie. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is the horse won't. Because
right.
the
no,
owner
no, no.
may have been told
agree.
By somebody else that it's been doing this and it's been doing that, but they haven't experienced it. So then they tell the next guy, well, you know, it's doing this and it's doing that, and they trust it. I trust but verify. And I would rather, I told these people, I was like, look, you want to bring it here? Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to have your horse between 90 and 120 days before I tell you exactly where we're headed. At 120 days, or maybe at 90, if I can get it at that point. But by 120 days, I'm going to be able to tell you whether or not I think your horse is going to make it through the training program to go on and become a show horse. Or whether you just need to take him home and he's going to be a nice riding horse, go do the ranch riding or trail ride him or go rope off of him, do something different. He's not going to make it through my program because of X, Y, and Z. But what he will be is safe enough for you to drag him out the stall, tie him up, saddle him, take him out to the arena, step on him, and you will have forwards, backwards, left, right, walk, trot, lope at the desired speed till you tell them otherwise. And that is what is missing in a lot of, I see people that come out and have, you know, do hauling lessons here. They'll bring their horse out, especially the younger ones. And you know, they're like, hey, you know, what do you think? And I'm like, I think you need to go back to the basics. And that happens so many times that I tell people to go back to the basics and go back to the foundation of what created what they're trying to do and rebuild it. If the foundation, if the first 90 to 120 days is done right, they mm-hmm. will never digress past that point. They will always be, you will always be able to reset them. You will always be able to go hit the default button, reset that thing. Yeah, it might take you 2 weeks to put it back together after you've reset it. But you'll always be able to reset it.
You have a better chance of fixing something with a good foundation versus not.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I've got some customers who are barrel racers, and they keep sending their horses out here for me to put 90 days on. And as much as I hate to admit, you know, that I take them, they're not bad horses. And they don't need to be what I want a horse to be, and that's kind of where I struggle, because I go, okay, you should be doing this, and I feel like I need you to be doing that, and we want to step it up and do this. And those horses don't need to be doing that. They just need to have that handle on them that I get on my two-year-olds by May, June of their two-year-old year. Because I can drag them out, saddle them up, get on them, trot around the arena in circles and serpentines and steer, and they're starting to learn outside rein. They know how to stop off my leg. They know how to stop off my voice. They know how to give their chin, and they know how to stop off the bridle rein. They know how to back up. They know their leads. And we're starting to get to a point where we're thinking about, you know, in the next 30 days from here, start to work on more hip control and add in the lead change. And, you know, we start maybe doing more stop, back, turn stuff and creating more efficiency and putting a little more finesse into some stuff rather than just bouncing off the fences.
Yeah. Well, you definitely have to have something to work with. It's kind of fantasy to think that you can just pull a horse out and they can start doing all the fancy stuff unless you start from square one. So.
Yeah, and there's but the problem is and I had this discussion with a lady this week, is that, you know, people don't know what they don't know.
Very true. No, very true.
And,
yeah.
And it took me quite a while to figure out what that meant when I was told it. You know, I mean, I'm pretty sure he was telling me I was a dumbass. But, you know, it's one of those deals where, you know, a lot of trainers assume people know, but they don't. But you don't want to belittle them and make them feel like they know nothing. If you educate and you explain and you say, hey, look, this is why. Because when we do this, you know, you're watching this now and you're going, I don't get it. Well, that's okay that you don't get it, because in 3 weeks or in 2 months' time, you will see the desired result. And yet, you know, training the horses is never about today. It's always about tomorrow, next week, next month. You know, you're always looking forwards. We kind of had this deal with my daughter here recently, because she's got a two-year-old that she's been riding, and she's been frustrating the hell out of her riding this two-year-old around. And he's a nice little gelding, you know, and she's been trying to do a lot of the work herself. And then she comes out and she watches my two-year-olds go around, and then she's out there, and his poor two-year-old of hers, he was clueless. But it's the same thing, you know, and like I tried to explain to her, riding a two-year-old is a totally different deal to riding a broke finish show horse. They don't know. They only know what we teach them, so be careful what you say to them.
This is very true, and that's anything in life. Obviously, you know, it has a lot to deal with. The person that you're talking to, are you on the same page? Are you understanding each other the same way? You know, I guess that would be different as far as horses are concerned, because you can get a context, you know, or even like a phone call, you can get like an emotional feel for how somebody's talking.
Well, I mean, and the thing is, you know, one of the biggest things I found to competitively showing horses like I do you have to know your horse. You know, this isn't a catch ride scenario. You know, it's not the collegiate deal where you get told what horse you're going to go ride, and you get 4 minutes on it, and you get to go show it. And
which is crazy, by the way.
Well, it is, and it isn't. I mean, you can tell those kids that have got feel and got timing and got some horsemanship skills versus those that don't.
Right. I personally know I would fail that. I mean, like, and I think I'm a decent rider. I'm not like some grand champion or anything like that. But when I heard that they kind of did it, like what you said it perfectly. Like, here's 4 minutes. Here's a horse. You don't know what you're getting. Hop on it. I'd be like, whoa.
I mean, and now don't get me wrong. There's a lot of fun aspect to that too. But at the same time, when we're going and showing and the customers I take up and down the road, I'm like, you have got to know your horse. And by know your horse, I mean know him. Know his quirks. Know his little idiosyncrasies. Know how he is, you know, even down to his lead departures. You know, is he a class clown? Is he going to jack you around a little bit somewhere here and there? You know, is he a workaholic? You know, but know him and know how he is in his lead departures. Know how he is to start his turnarounds. Know how he is to finish his turnarounds. If you know your horse and you know his limitations, you can show him consistently every time,
right,
as long as you do your job.
Right.
And that's the I find is one of the hardest things to teach to people, is to teach them how to learn their horse rather than just make it do the maneuvers. You know, just make that horse run a stop or make that horse turn or make that horse change leads. You know, and so many times you hear this, I really struggle changing leads on him. Okay, how far down the rabbit hole have you gone to break it down? You know, is it his hip, his rib, his shoulder, or is it his face? What is it that's being a problem, or what is it that's creating this problem in the lead change? And they kind of look at you like, well, I don't know. Well, the first problem is probably you. So what are you doing when you ask him to change leads? You know, because
you're not wrong.
Because, you know, it's like if I yell at you in Swahili, are you going to understand me? No. So instead I throw a spear at you. That helps, right?
No, you're touching on something that's very important, because, you know, it's like you talk to people who, I think it's amazing that trainers are able to ride different horses and be able to feel the different needs that each one needs to be able to communicate with them. Because, you know, let's say you can just take horse one and they're real sensitive and you can just hop on them and you just get what you want when you want it. You got to turn around and change the way you speak to the same animal, the same type of animal, but this next animal that you get on is a little more stubborn or they don't quite get it. So now you have to change. To be able to do that is really cool to me.
Well, and you know, I mean, that's just your horse that sucks back on the leg and is a little bit more lazy versus one that's a lot more forward going and needs a whole lot less leg, you know. But the same thing, you have to be able to ride those horses in order to then teach their owner and their bill payer how to ride them.
Right.
You know. And it's like sometimes, you know, like, we had it at the horse show there a couple of weeks ago where I had to get on one and kind of just put him back in the right spot in the turnaround, I guess is the best way to put it. He got lazy and was kind of leaning on the little girl and this and that, and I kind of got on him and I knocked him around for 5 minutes. You know, and she was like, well, how'd you do that? Well, I ride your horse at home every day. I know exactly how to push his buttons to make him say yes, sir.
No, how would you know that?
Right. You know, and I'm like, that doesn't mean you get to go do what I just did. But you get to go do one time. And if he's good, you're going to leave him alone. Because then he understands that if he does it right, he gets left alone. And that's to me one of the hardest parts. Like a lot of times, if I'm trying to leave a horse alone, I have to put a hackamore on it or something, or take my spurs off, or put one of the kids on it to go loping because I can't. I go into horse trainer mode and I'm like, oh, your nose is just too far outside or this or that. And I'm like, yeah, if I need to leave one alone for a few days, I have to let somebody else go loping.
So how are you able to just kind of switch your brain when it comes to being in trainer mode and go from this horse needs this to this horse needs this? Do you have to take a minute to adjust, or does it just come natural to you at this point?
It never turns off. That is constantly going. That'll be going at 6 o'clock in the morning when I get up and I'm walking out the door to go feed. I'll already be thinking about this horse or that horse, or, you know, kind of the same thing when I get done in the evening and go back to the house to go eat, or we'll be eating supper and something will pop into my head and be like, and I'll look at my wife and be like, I really should probably put that one in draw range tomorrow. You know, that never turns off. You're constantly thinking about it. So what I do to help myself with that is on my board, my riding board in the middle of the barn. So I have all the horses down one side, days of the week across the top. But I have a notes section on the very far hand right side. And in that notes section, once a week, once every 2 weeks, I will write a note of what I feel like is the biggest thing in that horse's way right now. You know, and that might be left side steering, breaking loose off the right rein. It might be working on the backup. It might be, you know, sometimes it might say right only, which means I'm only going to go to the right for the next 4 days, 5 days until that horse breaks loose and figures out exactly what I'm asking, then we'll go back the other way. You know, or go to draw reins, or step up bridle, you know, this, that, take, leave off noseband. You know, I'll make little notes for myself because I just find that helps me. But as far as being able to switch that off, that never switches off. I mean, doesn't matter whether I'm sitting in the truck, driving down the road to the next event, or whether I'm sitting at the dinner table eating supper with the family, that never turns off. And I think, and what I don't know is whether that's nature or nurture. I don't know whether that's been beaten into me or whether that was already there.
It might have already been there, because I think it takes a special person to be able to kind of ride horses and train horses, even people that deal with dogs or deal with animals in general. It's a completely different language, I think. Some people get it and some people don't, you know?
Well, see, but that's the thing. It's like, I've got some customers who've trained other animals, dogs and stuff like that. You know, we have dogs. I suck. I can barely train a dog to sit. You know, my dogs. I don't have any.
That's
dogs
why horse people get smart dogs, because Austin's like, they just, you don't even have to teach them, they just know.
I can't. And you know, and I have a dog trainer who's been a good customer, a great customer for a long time, and you know, but she's the same way. She can take a dog and do some incredible stuff with it. But then she can't apply it to the horses.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, some of these guys, when you think about the movies and all these animal trainers who've trained this multitude of animals for the movie sets, you know, that blows my mind. Because it's like, how do you train a lion to do that?
Can't train dogs or horses. So I mean, I only had success with one, so it doesn't really classify me as anything.
Success, you know, success, how do you rate success? that's an old question right there. How do you rate success? It's like, well, I'm alive. I guess that's a start. I stick to horses. I find them way more simple.
Yeah. They are way more simple, actually, and people make them complicated. I'll never forget it. This person told me one time, they said, you're not in the horse business, you're in the people business.
Right.
And I'm like, but they're horses. And they go, no, you're in the people business, not the horse business.
And then the people wonder why the majority of the horse trainers drink.
that's it that I had this time, actually, because this will be a second one. It's been a little crazy today here recently. People are pushing my buttons.
It happens. It happens.
It does. It does happen. And, you know, it's like my daddy's worked for himself his entire life. He was self-employed for 60 years. My grandpa worked for himself. And, you know, I keep trying to tell my dad, you know, I'm like, hey, it's different than when you were, you know, when they were in business, you didn't have social media. You didn't have any of that type of stuff. It's a whole lot different. And now it's just, I think it's more complicated than it needs to be sometimes, and it sucks, but it is what it is, you know?
Yep. I mean, it can be. I mean, and it doesn't matter. You know, especially now, it's even more exasperated now with, you know, the likes of social media and, you know, everybody having the internet in their pocket. I did on my little YouTube channel, I said something about this the other day, that was, you know, you can't please all of the people all of the time, but you can damn sure piss off a majority pretty quick.
Ain't that the truth? You really can. And it's sad that it's like people only choose to see the worst, and they actually know better. They're just doing it to just be assholes, I think, half the time.
Well, yeah, I mean, and the thing is,
these people know better.
A lot of times people don't necessarily remember the good as easily as they remember the bad. And I think that's part of, you know, human nature, honestly. And that's part of the psychology of it, is that people tend to remember the bad things far easier than they remember the good. And horses are the same. You know, they'll remember the bad stuff way, way faster than they'll remember the good. Yeah. And that can be a problem sometimes. You know, you can make a mistake, and then for the next 6 months, you're a heathen. You know, you're the devil himself. You know, but you'll have to go win all year long for people to let that slide. You know, it's tough. It is tough. But, you know, the thing is I like I tell my kids, ain't none of us perfect. We all gonna fuck up sometime, some way, somehow. Gonna do it. You know, and all you can do is, you know, all you can say to yourself is, I am not responsible for how other people view me. You know, how they look at me is on them, not on me. As long as I've done my job and I continue to do my job, I can't lose sleep over what somebody else thinks about me, because I might not even have ever met them. You know, maybe I did wind them up. Maybe I did say something something that was wrong or out of context, or they caught part of a conversation that they heard me having with somebody and it riled them up. You know, that's life, I'm afraid. And it's all, you know, all I can do is hope that I have tried to conduct myself in as good a way as I can for my reputation and for who I am. You know, as long as I stay true to myself, it's all good. I'm not going to be, not everybody's going to be my friend.
Yeah, no, and some people are just bound and determined to believe whatever they're told, which is, like, to me, I'm a very self-aware person, so I'm very, like, aware of me and what I am, and I try to take people for kind of my own perception of them, and I don't let what other people tell me influence me. And I think just a lot of people get caught up in, you know.
Yeah, I mean, but that comes back to, like, what... Right, but that comes back to same as, you know, taking a new horse in from somebody. Trust but verify. You know, I trust what they're saying, but I'm gonna verify it. I'm gonna find a way to be like, yep, no, they were right, or hey, that wasn't quite the way I feel like that went. You know, but that doesn't matter whether that's horse training or whatever you're doing. I think that's life in general. You know, we have to keep giving my eldest son a little bit of a smackdown when he comes home from college spouting all the new college stuff, and we're like, really, you want to go there with us? Probably not a good idea. Let us educate you on how it really happened. Here's a history book. Read it.
We get to you if you let it. I let it get to me sometimes.
It's one of those things. If it's out of your control, there's not a lot you can do about it. But you know, give it to God and let go. Let Him fix it. You know, because quite often we're worried about the wrong shit. I find,
yeah.
You know, and that's kind of the way I look at it is, you can't worry about stuff beyond your control. And if it's beyond your control right now, you know, let God deal with it. Because there's no sense in you losing sleep and stressing over something that you have absolutely zero say in at this point in time.
Yeah.
There you go. Look at me being a life coach. Fucking A.
Look at you being a life. You're on it, if you ask me. I'd rather take it from you than I would a few other people. I mean, I'd rather talk to people that have been through some things.
I've gone through some things. Most of them was self-created.
Well, that's not reassuring. I don't know about that.
Well, hey, at least I got myself out of it.
You know, I think probably one of my biggest thing is just, you know, when you talk to people, you're dealing with people, it's like even just recently you could talk to somebody, and if they are dead set committed on their perception, whether it's wrong or not, you're not going to get it anywhere.
No, and you know, and the thing is everybody's entitled to their own perception of it. They're all entitled to their own opinion, you know, and that's what I mean. Sometimes not everybody gets along, and I did. I spent a long time trying to please all of my customers and keep all of, you know, all the trainers I worked for, and you know, and eventually you're like, look, something's got to give, and you know, and my own peace of mind has to come above everybody else's. And as long as I know I've done my job, and I've rode everybody's horses sufficiently every week, and you know, maybe I'm having trouble with one. But I'm not afraid to tell that customer too anymore if they want to come see their horse. I'm like, yeah, you're welcome to come see him, but we're having some issues, and it might get a little western while you're here, so. Don't take it personally. Don't feel like this is an attack on your horse. But until we get this part figured out, we can't move along to the next piece of the puzzle. You know, and again, I think that just comes down to communication. Being able to say exactly what's on your mind without being a dick about it.
I have not mastered that.
the subtle art of diplomacy and not giving a fuck.
Yeah. Yes, there's actually a book. I think there's a book out there that teaches you the subtle. It's called The Art of Not Giving a Fuck. And I think I think that is the name of it. I'm going to have to Google it. It's The Art of Not Giving a Fuck.
That is actually a book. And
yes,
you know,
see?
And it's about, you know, having a little tact and diplomacy and a little bedside manner with a pinch of like, look, this is the way it is. This is how I see it right now. This is what we're going through. If you don't want to see it, come back in 2 weeks because it'll be gone.
Yeah.
And your horse will look awesome. You know, and I had that last year with a lady with a 2-year-old. I was asking her, hey, I think we need to geld this horse for him to to start making strides and become a show horse. Oh, you know, I'd really like to keep him this way. And I'm like, look, he's kind of an ornery son of a bitch, and he's a little study, and I think we're going to geld him. Oh, well, let's go another month. I'm like, well, he's not doing a whole lot better than he was, and now it's getting in the way of his education. And of course, every time she came out, I'd say this to her on the phone, every time she came out to see him, he rode around great. And, you know, and it just so happened that three times in a row she came to see him, and I didn't have other horses in the arena at the same time. That was the way it worked out those three times. And I'd been on the phone with her again, and I'm like, hey, look, we really need to talk about gelding this horse, because this isn't going to work with him like this. And she's like, fine, I'll come take a look and see. I'll come see you tomorrow and see what you're talking about. And I had another gelding actually tied out in my drop line in the arena. So I've got a long rope hangs from the rafters of the arena, like a patience pole deal, but yeah. It just happens to be in the arena where I can keep an eye on them. And they can trot circles on it and whatever and play and mess around, but they can't hurt themselves. I happen to have an older gelding tied to it, and I crawled up on this two-year-old, and he was good, and I loped him around and around the back of this one gelding tied on the drop line. I mean, this thing lost his mind. Stood up on his back legs and started squalling and bellowing, and I had to knock him around, and then we spent 20 minutes with him. All he could do was snort and holler at this damn gelding. And she goes, well, you didn't have to tie a mare out in the arena for me to see him be that way. I said, that's not a mare, that's a gelding. And we go through this every single day. And she's like, well, fine, just cut his nuts off. I said, thank you, Jesus. but you know, I was like, but sometimes the conversation doesn't quite cut it. They have to have the visual.
I can understand that.
But yeah, you have to still have to have a little bedside manner, a little tact.
I think I have to start working on that, because I have to start trying to work on it a little better. I think it's a generational difference between certain people, you know, like me and my sister. I'm just turned 40. You know, I don't want to say we grew up hard, but we worked hard. Like, and our parents were strict on us, and we, you know, are used to kind of figuring things out on your own, and just kind of like, we're used to people being harsh, I guess. Like, I don't get butt hurt. And, you know, even like today, I had this lady, she kind of looked at me funny when I asked her a question. I was like, oh, never mind. I didn't figure this out myself. And I said, I was sorry, you know, I apologize or whatever. And sometimes it's just a different way of thinking, and a generational way of thinking sometimes too, I think, can affect business and when you're dealing with people that are, you know, younger, for me, I guess, younger and then versus older and stuff like that. So, I don't know. It's just a change, and we're working on it.
Well, it is. I think one of those deals where your customer service has to play a huge part in what I do, you know, for sure. And I'm sure in your, you know, with you doing the media stuff and all the embroidery and the design and stuff like that. Your customer service has to play a huge part of it. Sometimes people catch us off guard on the wrong day, and they just happen to say the right thing that makes us turn around and go, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But that's life. And part of being an adult, unfortunately, you know, we have the bonus that we are able to smoke and drink as adults, but also, you know, part of that is being able to turn around to somebody the next day and go, hey, you know what, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it like that. You know, I've had to eat humble pie once or twice and go back and say to somebody, hey, I was wrong there earlier. I'm sorry. You know, that was, you called me at the wrong time, and it just happened to come out of my mouth exactly as I thought it.
Yeah.
You know.
No, trust me, I know exactly what you're talking about. And, you know, I've had to do that plenty of times. You know, I sit there and call a lady and tell her I'm extremely sorry for what happened and things of that nature. But sometimes,
you know, it's one of those things. I mean, again, that's human nature. People hate to apologize, even when they're wrong. And I'm the first one. If I'm wrong, I'll admit it. I'll be like, hey, like, that's on me. I was wrong.
Yeah.
I'll hold my hands up. I'll take my ass to it. You know, I'm not so conceited that I can't take an ass to it when deserved.
Right.
You know, I've made more friends by being able to say, hey, you know, that one was on me. Sorry. You know.
Well, just like our first podcast, remember me telling you I completely forgot and you had changed your schedule, and I kept telling you I'm sorry, that's my fault, I'm sorry, you know.
Right.
My bad.
Right, but at the same time, you know, life goes on.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's one of those things that, you know, just like we were, you know, talking about, you know, talking last week and things just got crazy. And then we were going to talk. And I was like, I had stuff to do. I didn't think I had anything to do on Sunday. And then I ended up having a bunch of stuff to do on Sunday. And I had to text you and say, hey, I can't do it today. And there was no way I was going to be able to sit and talk to you while I was helping out doing what I was doing. So life sometimes just gets in the way.
Yeah, it does. And you know what? We should all have human passes to be able to, you know, make mistakes. I'm a firm believer. Like, I had this conversation with this girl one time. She said, you don't ever make mistakes. And I was like, what? I make plenty of them, honey. I make a ton of them. I just don't choose to broadcast them to the world. Like,
right.
You know.
Right. You know, but I think one of the biggest mistakes is what we've made as societies moving forward is that we don't drink from the skulls of our enemies anymore.
You know, I am so glad you said that. Because look, like, have you ever looked at there was a YouTube thing done on certain countries' military, and they did one for the U.S., they did one for China, they did one for Russia, and something else. And when you get through looking at it, you almost think to yourself, damn, we are a bunch of pussies.
Well,
and I don't mean to be vulgar like that, but it's the truth. And
well,
like,
you know,
there's something.
It's one of those deals where it's like, look, you know, if like you see all this stupid shit going on with like TikTok with random acts of violence happening,
right?
You know, and it's like, you know, my son showed me one the other day, and I was like, you know what? If that motherfucker right there come up and cold cock me like that, he had better lay my ass out. Because if he doesn't, I'm going to rip him limb from limb. And I will do it while his friends video. And you know what? If two or three people did that, they quit that shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
you're right.
And it's like these protests going on at these colleges right now. Would somebody please tear gas these guys? Like they did down in Florida, just tear gas them. Be like, look, fuck off, go home. You want to protest? You want to protest what you're protesting right now? Why don't you get on a plane and go over there and see how that shit works out for you?
Absolutely, absolutely. And like, even the one that happened here in North Carolina, UNC. I don't exactly know the like everything about it. I caught a glimpse of it, but I believe some frat boys actually took the American flag and protected it because they kept trying to take it down. Let that shit happen. Like, we are too lenient over here as Americans. We've gotten to where we let too much shit slide.
Right. And
keep the peace for somebody else that don't even pay our bill.
And it all started with political correctness.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, And it's like, you know, and like my, you know, like my son's going to college and he'll come home, spout some of the stuff. And it's like, look, you know, I don't care what color you are, where you're from, what your heritage is, or how you identify. Are you going to be a pain in my ass, or are you going to be an upstanding member of society and you're going to be able to function in society? People that would come, you know, work me, ride me, whatever, I don't care where you're from, what you've done, you know, I don't care. But if you are not going to be a functioning member of society, then I care.
Yeah.
You know, and the problem is these guys that are identifying as, you know, they, thems, or, you know,
don't even get me started
this
on
that. And I hate to say it, but you go by some of these coffee shops and you end up having to raise an eyebrow when you get given your coffee. And it's like, really? It's probably about the only place you can get a job in.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but again, it's like I said to my son, it's like, most people don't give a shit about color, race, religion, you know, sexual orientation. They don't care. It's a small minority that is pushing it out in front of people, making most people think that people care, and they don't. They don't. I know my house doesn't. You know.
No, you that was just like that TikTok that was going around with this lady. This actually is a white family. It's a white mom and dad adopted two kids of color. And so this woman of color decides to make a TikTok talking about, why do white people adopt black kids? And it was, and it, this one guy absolutely just stomped it to the ground. He said, why are there any that need to be adopted in the first place?
Right. I mean, you know, good people are good people.
Exactly.
Good people are good people. Bad people are bad people. And it has no bearing. I mean, it absolutely has no bearing on race, religion, ethnicity. It makes no difference. Good are good. Not good are not good. You know. So, I don't know. We could sit and dissect that for hours.
Yeah, no, we should probably not, because that'd be too much. Like, we ain't got time for none of that. We like peace and quiet. We don't want problems.
I do like having my gates and my fence out front on the road, so that, you know, I'm set back here, away from the road, on my little compound. I keep myself to myself. You know, and I've had people ask me, and my driveway is a good quarter mile long. And I think, like, why'd you sit it so far long? So I can scope your ass in on your way up the driveway.
Right.
I got time to set everything where I need it.
Well, you know what? We should, you know, instead of the purge, they should go back. You know, the purge is where, like, the lights go off for 24 hours and you can do all kinds of stuff. Instead of the purge, America should go back to the old Western days. Well, you could just shoot people if they did you wrong, you know, like horse stealing. You could just, you know, I mean, I don't mean to say it like that, but it used to happen. That's how you used to deal with things.
Well, but that's the whole, you know, Second Amendment, right to bear arms. You know, the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
yes, absolutely.
I mean, you know, and that's kind of like, All my children know their way around a firearm. They know shotguns, rifles, pistols. I mean, I'd be pretty safe to think that those guys can tell the difference between a real one and a fake one, and they know how to use. So, but at the same time, I feel like everybody, you know, instead of bitching about it,
well, you have the Second Amendment. You have the right to bear arms. Maybe you have to go take a course in your state or wherever you live, but you should. I don't ever leave my gates without carrying something.
Right.
Just because you never know. And I am not going to risk being out there with my family, you know, and risk something bad happening somewhere because I wasn't able to protect myself or my family.